If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. WWE Hall of Famer Bully Ray and I get you ready for Stomping Grounds coming up this Sunday. Plus, we talk to one of the great minds in the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Bully Ray and I sit down with commentator for New Japan Pro Wrestling, Kevin Kelly. We get you ready for the G1 tournament. Plus, night number one in Dallas, Texas. Is Dallas the right place for New Japan? Plus, some of the underdogs and some of the favorites in what is probably the biggest tournament in pro wrestling. Also, we get you ready for the main event at Stomping Grounds and how Seth Rollins' significant other could come into play and what could take place in his match with Baron Corbin. Plus, we get into the entire card of Stomping Grounds. What matches are you looking forward to and what matches could be a dud? All that right here on the Busted Open Podcast. Are you excited for what we're going to see at Stomping Grounds?
I think the thing that I'm most excited for is the one thing I don't know about. Who's going to be the referee? That's what's got me intrigued. If you look at the show on paper, there are some good matches there, right? I mean, Kofi versus Dolph is going to be a great match. Seth versus Baron is going to be a really good match because Baron is, you know, Baron's a heel.
It could be.
So I think it's going to be a good match. Whether or not the people are going to be into it because of the, I guess, the dislike for Baron right now, but back in our day, you know, that dislike, you know, turned into wanting to see the babyface kick the heel's ass.
But also,
I'm not quite so sure that Seth is the babyface.
Yeah, I know. We had that discussion yesterday. But also, too, the special guest referee may make this match a little wonky as well. So I'm not sure what we're going to get. Again, because we don't know who the special guest referee is going to be, but that could be a bit of a wonky match on Sunday.
Let's go outside of the box for a second. So any of the people that we saw on TV, we know are not going to be the special guest referee. It's not going to be Kevin. It's not going to be Sammy, because they kind of checked that box and said, nope, not him. No, not him. We think it's entertaining if it would be Brock, yes?
It would definitely be interesting if it's Brock Lesnar.
Okay, I'll give you that word. I'll give you interesting. Let's go outside of the Brock Lesnar box. Who else would make it really interesting? Who would come out that would make you sit up and go, "Oh wow, I got to watch this."
There isn't a long list. I mean, you talk about going outside the box. Mark and I definitely did that. I even threw out the name Bray Wyatt as far as like who this could possibly be, because the choices are pretty slim. If you go by what matches we're going to see on Sunday, like a lot of people were speculating because where the pay-per-view is going to be in Tacoma, Washington, that maybe it would be Daniel Bryan. But if you're going to have Daniel Bryan as a special guest referee, you probably would announce that beforehand to sell some tickets. Plus, Daniel Bryan now is in a match with Heavy Machinery at Stomping Grounds with his partner Rowan. So I don't think it's going to be Daniel Bryan. Like you mentioned with Kevin Owens. And
you know what's interesting here? You just said something that brought a thought. You said sell some tickets. Ticket sales for this show aren't very brisk.
That's being nice.
Okay, yeah. So the ticket sales are not good for this show. So you think that they would have announced who this really special referee was if this referee had the ability to sell a ticket and put asses in seats? So if you know ticket sales are not good, and it was going to be Brock Lesnar, do you say it's Brock Lesnar so people show up, or do you need to keep it a surprise?
Brock, that's an interesting one, because like if you say Daniel Bryan, you got to announce that beforehand. If it was like a returning legend like a Shawn Michaels, you have to announce that beforehand. But with Brock Lesnar, I think it's a little bit different, because I'm sure there are going to be some people that think they might still see Brock Lesnar do a cash-in on Sunday. So there is that big question mark, and I think you want to make that a bit of a surprise. So with Brock Lesnar, you could lean either way. Is announcing Brock Lesnar going to sell extra tickets? Maybe it would, but there's always going to be – that's what's great about Brock holding on to this briefcase right now, is that there's always going to be that question. So there's going to be people who buy a ticket thinking that there's a good chance he might cash in on Sunday.
Here's a name that I thought of that I can tie together and would kind of make sense. This is not perfect by any means. What if the special guest referee was Kurt Angle?
See, that is a great one. That's great because you need that to be a surprise. That is not somebody you can announce beforehand, because the whole makeup of that would be the shock and surprise that it's Kurt Angle. But again, it's supposedly Baron Corbin that's choosing who the special guest referee is. So unless somebody overturns that decision, he's not going to pick Kurt Angle.
Well, if Baron Corbin can't find anybody to have his back, or if Seth Rollins takes out everybody and one of the McMahons were to come out and say, well, since you can't find somebody, we're going to appoint somebody, and it turns out to be Kurt. Kurt has a history with Baron.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the last match that they had at WrestleMania. Also, if Brock was to get involved and try to cash in, Kurt has a history with Brock. Like I said, it's not a perfect example or a perfect idea or a perfect suggestion, but I can tie those ends together.
Do you suspect that possibly this special guest referee may be a disappointment based on the fact that they didn't announce it on Monday and give it ample time to promote for the pay-per-view? Could this be somebody that's on the roster that's kind of ho-hum and a bit of a shoulder slumper?
It definitely can be, because obviously at the end of the day, what do you want to do? You want to sell a ticket, you want to sell the show, you want to sell a pay-per-view, you want to sell a network subscription. By not knowing who that referee is, I might not want to, you know, buy a ticket to the show or tune into the network. However, if you think about this in reverse, maybe just the intrigue of, oh my God, who is it going to be, makes you do that. Now, the ticket sales live in the arena are not brisk, and who knows what's going to go on with the network. I don't have high hopes, but since this is such a mystery, I think that they have to deliver. Because if somebody comes out and you just go, ugh, people are going to be so disappointed. It's got to be somebody good. It's got to be somebody interesting. So I'm going to go outside of the box on another name, John Cena.
Again, you know, it's the same thing. Baron Corbin probably wouldn't choose a John Cena. Somebody else would have to get involved to make this happen and have this take place. Because the whole story, Bully, is that Baron Corbin, to get back at him what happened over at Jeddah, is now going to announce who the special guest referee is. If it's not going to be Baron, then this whole story leading up to this match is completely null and void. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be Baron's choosing, and it's going to be somebody that's on the roster right now.
Third choice, really outside of the box, and they haven't told this story yet on TV, but would this be the right place? What if Baron Corbin chooses Becky Lynch?
See, that's, you know, we speculated that a little bit with Mark and the callers. Now you're going down a road that will take you well past what's going to take place Sunday on Stomping Grounds, because they've had made some hints about their relationship on WWE programming. Obviously, on social media, they announced it to the world. And
they're calling them the power couple, yes, of the WWE.
Yes. So, but it hasn't really been pronounced on WWE programming. This is a way to do it, and this is something that would take you past Stomping Grounds and could also give Baron Corbin the advantage. I love the idea.
I don't know who else it could possibly be. I'm really trying to make sense of it. The Nation normally has some really great ideas. If you have an idea that makes sense, makes sense, just please don't call in with random names. If you have one that makes sense, somebody who can tie into Baron, somebody that can tie into Seth, please let us know. I'd either hit us up on the Twitter machine or call into the show.
Let me ask you this. And you mentioned Becky Lynch, and I really do like the idea because, like I said, it's intriguing, it's interesting, and it'll also take you well past what we see on Sunday. They haven't really talked about their relationship on Raw or SmackDown. You've seen glimpses of them backstage and everything else, but they haven't really talked about it. Do you need to talk about something like that before you have that take place on a pay-per-view? Like they, you know how the WWE overanalyzes everything and over-explains everything. Would they do something like that on a whim on a pay-per-view without really announcing it to the WWE universe?
The traditional wrestler in me says you don't do it because you haven't told the story yet about Seth and Becky. But this is, might be exactly why you should do it. They've teased it enough on on their Twitter. Listen, their Twitter hits 10 million people. Okay, there's probably a significant amount of people in the WWE universe between the WWE's own Twitter and social media and every other, you know, news site, dirt sheet that's out there. Mm-hmm. People kind of know that Seth and Becky are together. So what has Seth been doing to everybody who has even talked to Baron Corbin?
He's taken a chair to him.
Even his friend, Eric Young, right?
Yep.
What happens if he comes out with that chair and he's ready to bash no matter who comes out in the face with that chair and Baron says the special guest referee is Becky Lynch?
Shoo.
What a moment.
That is definitely a moment. And again,
what a moment.
And here's the thing, Bully, that's exciting about that. It's blurring the lines between a story on TV and a story that's happening outside of the ring.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
Kevin Kelly, who joins us here on Busted Open. Kevin, how are you today?
Hey, it's great to be with you guys. I'm more an Alfred guy, you know? Like, he was, he was the man.
But
he
which
kept everything going.
But which Alfred? Oh, original Alfred with Adam West or like Alfred from like the modern movies?
No, Alfred with Adam West. You and I are on the same wavelength, Bubba. We got that going.
We're on the same wavelength because we were born in the same year.
That's true.
Listen, a lot going on with New Japan. Night one of the G1 Climax from Dallas airs live exclusively on XS TV on July 6th at 6 o'clock Eastern Time. And then the G1 Climax on Saturday will air the same day in primetime on XS TV at 9 p.m. starting on July 13th, and you can find that all on Access TV. So, Kevin, really exciting times when it comes to New Japan.
This is the best time of year. I was trying to think last night because I was thinking about this. You know, we were going to be talking this morning, and I was trying to think, like, what in regular sports compares to the G1? And, you know, it's like the greatest, it's like the World Cup, where it's a month long and it's kind of round robin-ish and a lot of teams, you know, the teams will play each other for the most part in soccer and it's a global event. And that now is what the G1 is becoming, with the first time ever a G1 event is happening away from Japan. So it's just remarkable history at the exact right time for the industry, and because wrestling hasn't been this hot in years and years and years. So this is a perfect time for new fans to come aboard and jump in and see the greatest tournament in wrestling.
Kevin, how do you think the rest of the Japanese wrestlers in New Japan are feeling and reacting to Moxley coming into town?
I think they are, and you probably would know this personally. I think it's a wait and see approach. They're very polite, they're very cordial, but I think there is some of, I'm not so sure I want to get in the ring with this guy. because he looks dangerous and he looks like he could hurt me. and that, you know, I freshening up the roster for the G1, I think, is going to benefit him because some of the older guard and is not in, which I think is a good thing. And I think there'll be more guys that'll be more conducive and more open to wanting to work with him and do some, you know, not afraid to have a hard hitting match, you know, especially with the new guys that are in this year.
You know, when you look at John Moxley and even going back to Chris Jericho, like you talk about New Japan just being a shot in the arm for these guys and how it really kind of rejuvenated their careers and their passion for pro wrestling. Do you agree with that?
Well, I definitely see it in terms of when I had never met Moxley before his debut. So I walked up, I shook hands with him, and I don't think he knew who I was, but he was very, like, kind of cautious. Then I talked to him on the bus after Dominion and after the Sunday event, and he was much more loose and relaxed, and I think he got it. He knew what he wanted to do when he made this deal, and I think everything is working out for him. And it certainly worked out for Jericho, who comes into every match that he has in New Japan with a game plan and a goal in mind. And that's to get himself over, show the fans that he can still do it at the highest level, and at the same time, take it back old school ways and build programs with guys that he can make money with and that can make money with him and that can benefit by being in the ring with him.
You know, Kevin, Jericho had had many successful tours of Japan when he first started out with War, with New Japan, going back to the, you know, to Japan with the WWE, obviously returning to New Japan a couple of years ago. So Japanese fans were very familiar with Chris Jericho, thus the response Jericho got when he came back. How did the Japanese fan base react to Moxley? What was it like to feel that reaction live or experience that reaction live? Did everybody know who he was?
It felt like it. It sure did feel like it in that building because I was, like many people, are they going to know, you know, because they didn't announce him as Dean Ambrose, of course. Will they know who this is? And as soon as they saw his face, as soon as the graphic popped up in the video, they went crazy. And as soon as his music hit and he started to do that entrance through the crowd, then everybody at Ryogoku got it. And they were wild for him. But they were equally as wild for Juice, that it was very much like, these are two guys that we want to see. We know they're going to knock hell out of one another. And they did exactly that. It was a great, great match. And they're both in the G1. They're both in the same block. And they meet on the next to last night. They won't meet until the end of the tournament. And it could come down to that match for one of them to advance to the finals. So there is a lot on the line when these two will meet again.
Kevin, you just mentioned Juice Robinson. Do you think Juice Robinson got anything out of that match with Moxley? Moxley came out the shining star, and it was a bit one-sided. What do you think it did for Juice?
It's the long-term play for Juice. That type of match gets Juice more over in Japan because of the mindset of the fans. They want to see the babyface fight from underneath in a long-term scenario. So it's not just about the comeback within that match. It's the long-term path and journey. It's very much like a Tanahashi. Tanahashi was down and as low as he can get with Jay White in the match that, you know, preceded Juice to Mox. And, you know, Tana's crying afterward because he disappointed the fans so much. And Juice, it was a shot in the arm for him because it allowed him to, he cut braids and he put the last vestiges of his FCW run, which he's been running away from ever since he left and came to New Japan. It allowed him to completely put that in a rearview mirror. And now this is a different Juice, you know, long-term going forward, we're going to see a different guy in New Japan.
You know, Kevin, before you were trying to compare something from the world of sports to the G1. You know, one thing I love about New Japan, and I've mentioned it on this show many times, is not only the competitive sport feel to New Japan Pro Wrestling, but what they do after the matches with the press conferences, so like what you see with a sports team and, you know, speaking to the media after a big win or a big loss. I mean, the story that not only was told between Robinson and Moxley in the ring, but even what was played out in the pressers afterwards, that's such a great attribute, I think, to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
It adds to the story. It really does. And we, as the announcers, talk a lot about that at the next event. So, and I'll tease that, oh, I can't wait to hear what so-and-so is going to say after this match, because I have a feeling it's going to be some pointed comments or it'll be fired up. And then we will talk about, well, if you caught the, you know, sound on tape, the interviews that were captured immediately after the match, you heard a very fired up Tetsuya Naito, or a despondent Tanahashi crying his eyes out, talking about how he disappointed the fans. It's remarkable, and it just adds to the story in a completely organic way. It's nothing is scripted. None of it's, you know, hey, say this. Here's what you're going to say. There isn't any of that. It's just, you go and you talk, and there's even a sign that hangs up as the guys come through the curtain, and it's written in Japanese and English, and it alerts them to where the comment section is, and it invites the talent to please come join us. Like, it's not a requirement. And it's like, no, I'm going to go and I'm going to speak. I'm going to get myself over here. It's great. And we put those up on New Japan World as soon as we can, and the fans are able to see them. And then we incorporate some of that into the Access broadcast as well, because it's so good. And we want the fans to hear from the wrestlers.
Kevin, you've been with New Japan for about 3 years now, maybe a little more.
Yes. Yeah. 2015 I started.
Okay. So you got a pretty good sense of the Japanese wrestlers there, their strengths, their weaknesses, who the over guys are. What's the one matchup that you really think would work for Moxley? What Japanese wrestler versus John Moxley do you know will put asses in seats in Japan?
Well, if he's up against and he's opposite Block, but if he gets to the finals, against an Okada, that I think that's a huge money match. It wouldn't shock me at all to see Moxley win the G1, just because a Moxley versus Okada main event at Wrestle Kingdom is a worldwide event. And with two nights at Tokyo Dome, there's going to be, you know, a need to sell upwards of 80,000 tickets. So I could see that happening. And I could also see, you know, him and Ibushi having just a flat out war. There isn't a bad match for Moxley with the lineup as currently constructed. There's so many dream matches, and guys that aren't in the tournament this year, like a Minoru Suzuki, which was an eye-catching omission. As I think the belief is that they want the tournament to get younger. I kind of felt that in that leaving Makabe and Suzuki out, that there was a move to have the tournament go younger, more global, more physical. But a Moxley versus Suzuki match down the line is going to sell out any venue. If they brought it to, if they did it in England, let's say, that would sell out any building in England. That's how big that match could be.
Here with Kevin Kelly, night one of the G1 Climax from Dallas airs live exclusively on Access TV July 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And I want to ask you about night one, being in Dallas. I mean, obviously a rich tradition when it comes to pro wrestling in Dallas, but this is a complete change of environment, not only for New Japan, but Dallas. What are you expecting for night one in Dallas?
I think I think the entire event is going to be important for New Japan, for what they learn from it, and how it's not just, hey, let's just tack up the sign and then it's immediate sellout. Promoting in America, especially now in the environment that we're in wrestling, it's a little bit different. And they're going to learn some lessons from how to promote properly in the U.S. There's going to be an intense, spirited crowd there. I just don't think it's going to be as full as it could be. And that, to me, is the that's going to be the one big takeaway. But the fans are going to be psyched because people are going to be traveling. It's 4th of July weekend. People are going to be traveling to Dallas. It's going to be just tons of fun. And, of course, with the, you know, the rich tradition in the Dallas area, the Metroplex with the Von Erichs going back to the world-class days, you know, there'll be some old fans that come back, I'm sure, for that. It's going to be very, very good to see in a beautiful building, Mark Cuban's home building, home of the Dallas Mavericks and Stars. It's going to be a great showpiece, plus live on access. Everything's going to look great. Everything's going to feel great. And we know that the matches are going to be stellar.
Kevin, when I hear New Japan coming to a city like Dallas, it feels like a bit of a disconnect for me. I understand why with Mark Cuban and the American Airlines Arena and Access TV. I get the business end. If it was up to you, would Dallas have been your first choice, or would you have gone to more of a traditional city where a New Japan product would be swallowed up in an instant?
It's tough because even though, you know, Dallas is not New York, not Philadelphia, those would be two cities that would be, okay, probably ahead of the list. It's still an expensive media market in terms of ad buys and things like that. So I think you know, I could see both sides. Would it have been better to run this in the Northeast? Of course. Could we have found a venue in Philly on one of the college campuses and a 6,000-seat arena, I think, that you guys did in TNA, that probably would have sold out? Yeah, I think that probably would have been better. But, you know, you've got a spectacle here with G1, and you bite the bullet and you open up a new market with a huge stellar event. I guarantee you that what the fans see on July 6th, if we come back to Dallas, they're not going to want to miss the second go-round. So you can use your big tentpole event to sort of bring the crowd in for, you know, doing business going forward, but at a little bit of sacrifice because this is the first time. And it's, you know, a lot of fans had already committed their traveling dollars with All In 2 and wanting to go and see that show in September, and it's 4th of July weekend, and there's a lot of things going on. It's different than being in Japan. So lessons are being learned with each new event they put forward.
You know, Kevin, with the expansion into the U.S., what wrestler or what was the big key with this expansion? Like, what do you think really set it over the top and why it's been so successful?
I think that because it hasn't changed, I think that this is the New Japan that fans are getting to see in the U.S. now, that the old fan, going back to the tape trading days, is still familiar with. But it's modernized and westernized, and obviously having, you know, media partners like Access TV helps, and being able to present everything going forward. Giving the fans in Dallas, for example, an Okada versus Tanahashi, which we're going to see on July the 6th, is the matchup that has been the kind of overarching theme of New Japan over the last 7 years. So whether it's the older fan or the brand new fan or the fan who kind of jumped on with this Okada-Tanahashi rivalry, I think that it was always the quest to see that dream matchup, to see Okada and Tanahashi and what it could have been. I don't think New Japan has fired all their bullets in the U.S. either. You know, we gave them the U.S. title tournament. We've given them some big matches. But there hasn't been that. This show has not been as big as a Dominion, or has not been as big as a Wrestle Kingdom, or any of their, you know, huge events every year. Now this one is, and they're not playing around. So it's going to be, this will be the one that drives everybody going forward.
Kevin, when was the last time you saw New Japan relying so much on American talent like they kind of do with Jericho and now Moxley?
Wow, it's been a long time. You know, of course, going back in the day, it was the, you know, Inoki facing the foreign heel. And now what we're seeing is New Japan becoming a much more global company and not just relying on the Japanese stars and bringing in the foreigners to provide good matchups for them. It's the fans in Japan are as smart and savvy as fans in the U.S. They're all connected via social media. They know what's going on in the wrestling world. And it's now it's a brand new day for a company that has been reticent to change and grow with the times at times throughout the years. They've been a little bit sort of stuck in their ways, some would say. But it, again, when business isn't good, you can't fault them. Hey, it's working. Why change? Now we're seeing a more, you know, much more prevalent embrace of what's going on globally in wrestling. So that, I think, is where this big change is coming from.
Kevin, I really don't get into much of the dirt sheet type rumors. I think they're all full of garbage and are all bottom feeders. But something was brought up last week that I just want to ask you about to clarify. There was a rumor about Gato, the booker for New Japan. There was problems. Was that just some horrible rumor, or were there problems with the creative committee?
No, people. I got messages right away from a couple of, you know, reputable wrestling journalists who wondered, is this legit? Because the site that reported it has been a little sketchy in the past. And I said, I haven't heard anything. And then it was quickly squashed. So I'm not sure whether it was just completely made up. I'm not sure if it's a situation of, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. But it quickly went away as, you know, almost as fast as it was reported. It caught me by surprise. It would be a huge blow if that did happen.
Absolutely. I mean, that guy is, he's so good at what he does. So when I heard that, I was thinking to myself, wow, something either drastically went wrong or this is a complete fabrication and a complete lie, because Gato has been awesome as the booker of New Japan.
Yeah, nothing else was said about it. Nothing was reported. And I, you know, I'm kind of in tune with the boys in the locker room. And if there was anything to it, I would have heard about it. So there hasn't been anything said about it since then. And it was just rumor that was started by a questionable site. So thankfully, because again, like you said, Bubba, this would be a huge blow. So thankfully, there was nothing to it.
Kevin, last question from me. Looking at this G1 right now, for some fans that are listening to the show that are not familiar with New Japan and want to catch it on Access TV, what's the one wrestler that you think is must see in this tournament?
One? Well, I mean, when you look at... okay. Let's just say who has the most to play for. Let's do that.
Okay.
Somebody that has seen that foreign fans, that Western fans are familiar with, was the former Hideo Itami. Coming back to Kenta. That guy's got a lot to play for. He's got a lot to prove. Because he had a rep in WWE when he was competing there. He fought hard. He did great. But he was injury prone. And he couldn't answer the bell in a big spot. So is he the guy that was, you know, garnering so much worldwide attention that got signed, or are his best days behind him? He's going to have 9 singles matches against the best heavyweights in the world to prove it. And we're going to know exactly what type of wrestler and what the future is for Kenta at the end of this tournament. As far as everybody else, I think it's going to be – it's at least 9 opportunities to turn it out. And – No one is going to be able to just get in on reputation alone going forward, because we've seen that now. We talked about it last year when Rocky and I would do the commentary, and I'm watching these matches, and I'm watching just so-so efforts. So-so, meaning I know there's other wrestlers out there in the world that can have better matches than what these guys are doing, but I know they have homegrown reputations in New Japan. They deserve to be in this tournament each year because of who they are and what they've been. Or is it time to turn the page? And they've done that this year. And some of those guys are now on the outside looking in. And there's a lot more knocking at the door that want in. So I think that's the one thing. Everybody's going to have to fight and prove that they belong. and give 100% max effort each and every match. There's going to be so many little sub-stories that weave through in and out. You know, how does Switchblade Jay White recover from the loss of the IWGP Heavyweight title? What does Tanahashi still have in the tank? Could Okada, as reigning champion, win the thing? Is this Ibushi's year? Ibushi's a lot of people's favorite. Is he the guy that's finally going to do it? What can Tetsuya Naito do? How crazy will those guys go in their respective block matches? Is Zack Sabre Jr. Truly the best wrestler in the world? We're going to find all these things out.
Wait, Kevin, you said Zack Sabre Jr. is the best wrestler in the world?
He certainly claims it.
You think he's better than Ospreay?
I'd want to see the match. There isn't anybody that can do what Ospreay can do, and there isn't anybody that can do what Zack Sabre Jr. can do.
I got to tell you, pound for pound, it's Ospreay for me. I mean, the kid is amazing. And he's only going to get better and better, but the things that he does, so entertaining. And I think he does a good job of telling New Japan stories and staying true to the style that he wrestles. So I can appreciate your love for Zack Sabre. I give Ospreay the edge, but I agree with you. Those guys head-to-head, one hell of a match.
Oh, yeah, and with Ospreay, the added – yeah, he's not a full-fledged heavyweight. He's probably 15 pounds underneath the 220 weight limit. But the weight that he's added, he only started training with weight 8 or 9 months ago. He never lifted weight before. Now he's added a little bit of cushion for his body, and he started to get a little smarter with his style. And I think he's going to elongate his career because of that. And he's added a little bit more oomph to everything that he does. Could very well be there in the end. It's last year there were legitimately two or three guys that I said could win the block. Now each block, it's like four or five guys that I think have a legitimate shot to win in each block. It's always a pick 'em, and it's worse this year than ever before.
Night one of the G1 Climax from Dallas airs live exclusively on Access TV July 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and each G1 Climax Saturday event will air same day in prime time on Access TV at 9 p.m. Eastern starting July 13th. The great commentator from New Japan, Kevin Kelly, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Man, thank you, guys. It was awesome, and I'd love to come back anytime.
Love it.
Thanks,
love
Kevin.
It. Thank you, Kevin. Kevin Kelly from New Japan Pro Wrestling.
If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new Sirius XM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
Just getting back to what Kevin said about Ospreay adding a little bit more cushion, and that should make him successful. If cushion is all you need, me and Dreamer should probably be the IWGP Tag Team Champions right now.
Oh, boy. You know, it's funny, and I believe at Dominion, it might even have been Kevin Kelly, because he said Zack Sabre Jr., and he kind of backtracked a little bit. Like, he said he was the best wrestler in the world. And you said, did you just say Zack Sabre Jr. is the best wrestler in the world? And he said, well, he certainly claims to be. And then you mentioned Will Ospreay and how much you like Will Ospreay. And I believe it was Kevin Kelly at Dominion that said Will Ospreay's match with Dragon Lee, he saw a little bit of Zack Sabre Jr. and some of the style that Will Ospreay was using in that match. So it's an interesting comparison between the two.
When you put Ospreay in the ring with a Dragon Lee or a Zack Sabre or a Jay White, they're going to put together incredible athletic aerial spot fest type matches that are going to be very heavy on moves and you know, interchanges and, you know, just different kind of spots. And for what it is, it's extremely entertaining. Like, you'll have people look at any of those matches and goes, yeah, but there's no psychology. Okay, you know what? You listen to a Ramon song and it's 3 minutes three chords, and it's get in, get on, get off, get out, and you love it. It doesn't have to be, you know, Tom Sawyer by Rush. You like different songs for different reasons,
yes.
And I like different styles of matches for different reasons. And when I watch an athletic contest that, and, you know, like Will Ospreay is in, I'm floored by the stuff he does. I'd love to see Ospreay in a storyline with somebody who's the complete opposite of him. I'd love to see Ospreay against a Suzuki, more of a fighter. I like to see those clashes in styles, because when you bring them together, you normally get something special. But yeah, all those guys that we talked about, the Sabres, the Ospreys, the Jay Whites, phenomenal athletes, incredible performers. Good stuff.
You mentioned Jay White. This is a really important tournament for Jay White, because you look where Jay White was leading to the event, the G1 event at the Garden in April, and where he is right now. A little bit of a misstep, and we'll see, as Kevin said, how he's going to recover in this tournament.
You know, the biggest thing that impresses me the most about Jay White is how much he's come out of his shell. I remember meeting him 3 years ago in Ring of Honor, and I was like, man, this kid really needs some personality. I think that personality has come out over the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Looks good, does phenomenal stuff in the ring, just a little bit more personality. The leader of the Bullet Club, he's had a taste of success. Well, he's had a little bit more of a taste of success. He was the champion.
Yep.
A little bit of a step backwards, but that's okay, because you know, one step back for me means two more steps forward in the long run, and I think he's got nothing but great things on the horizon. That personality really needs to come through and shine, and I think it has been over the past, as of late.
And you mentioned Moxley, and obviously that's going to be somebody that everyone's eye is going to be on during this tournament. But also we talked about Juice Robinson, and this is an important tournament for Juice Robinson. In that match with Moxley, you're right, Moxley dominated that match for the most part, came out the victor. Juice Robinson in the presser after that match, you know, he said, hey, man, you know, you all wanted this for Moxley. Everyone overlooked me, and what you wanted actually happened in the ring. He's got something to prove in this tournament as well.
There's no doubt, and I think he's making a stronger commitment to New Japan right now, just because that's where he wants to be. I believe he might be moving over there. I know there were some rumors that were going on about recently about Juice not wanting to work for Ring of Honor and all of these lies thrown out there. Completely untrue. I believe Juice is moving to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a financial situation where New Japan is really taking care of him. I don't think it's going to be easy on him to do all the traveling. So he's making a choice that's, you know, good for him and has nothing to do with any outside circumstances. So whatever you're reading out there about why Juice and Ring of Honor might not have as much of a relationship or as much of a schedule moving forward is strictly logistics, because Juice, I believe, is moving to Japan.
And the last thing I'll say about this G1, and it's going to be interesting to see what kind of crowd we're going to see in Dallas, because as you brought up in the interview with Kevin, you know, not the traditional market you would think for New Japan, though there's a rich history in Dallas when it comes to pro wrestling. And when you talk about a rich history, I always look at Tanahashi. I've said it before on our air. I think he's the greatest New Japan pro wrestler of all time. You know, you got what you had with Jericho, so that's going to be interesting what happens with that down the line. But when it comes to Tanahashi, that's going to be my guy that I'm rooting for in this tournament. Is he somebody I think is going to come out the victor? Who knows? But I know in my heart of hearts that's somebody I'm going to be rooting for.
Rooting for, yes, but I don't think he should be the guy. There's a part of me that doesn't think that Moxley should be the guy either. You know why?
Why?
He's the obvious choice. It's a little too obvious that, mm-hmm. that Moxley would win. Like, you know, Kevin brought up, now the name's slipping me, Minoru Suzuki.
Yep.
Like, I'd love to see, you know, Moxley get deep into the tournament, but then be taken out by Minoru Suzuki, so he would have an angler and a storyline. Because Moxley versus Suzuki, as Kevin said, that sells out anywhere. It might not sell out in the United States, but it sells out anywhere else in the world because of the intrigue. Like, he talked about England, absolutely. I think there would be a tremendous amount of intrigue there. You take that to the Manchester Evening News Arena or the O2 in London, those wrestling fans there are rabid for something like that.
Now, you mentioned Suzuki, and Kevin Kelly told us that he's out. He did not, you know, he's the glaring omission from this tournament, because he said that they want this tournament to be younger. So that kind of throws in, like you said, for Tanahashi. If they really want to go younger, and this is probably the opportunity to do it in an environment that I think will thrive on the youth in this tournament, it's probably going to go another way.
It's interesting to hear New Japan say that they want to go with a youth movement, because for the past 10 years, you've heard WWE say that they want to go with a youth movement. And what happens when the youth movement doesn't exactly work because of creative? What do they always rely on?
They rely on the legends.
Exactly. Now, is it the youth's fault or is it creative's fault? Normally, it's creative's fault because they're not utilizing the youth the same way that they utilized or pushed the legends. So a guy like Tanahashi, I think New Japan will do a better job in pushing their youth. Guy like Tanahashi, I want to see him make it deep, maybe into the semifinals, but then put a younger kid over. Because does Tanahashi really need to win the G1?
Probably not, no.
He's still going to be Tanahashi. He's Teflon. He's still going to be as great as he ever was. But he's definitely a guy that a younger wrestler can get the rub from and take that next step.
Let's go out to the Busted Open Nation. And John, in California, what did you want to say about the G1?
Good morning, guys. A couple of things I wanted to bring up. Dave, I think you and I are probably around the same age, and I appreciate what you said. What you brought up earlier in the show about when you first started watching wrestling, I can remember watching, you know, WWE, NWA, AWA, WCW, just like you did. And, you know, in recent years, you know, I think the last time I had watched Impact, for example, was back when Bully was doing the Aces and Eights angle, which was a very good angle, by the way. But in recent years, you know, I was just watching WWE. And I don't want to knock WWE necessarily, but, you know, I think reflecting back, I was limiting myself on, you know, there's so much good wrestling out there. And what your show, you know, I just discovered your show last year. And, you know, I have to give props to Bully, Mark Henry, and yourself, the input that you have, the experience that you have in the wrestling industry, because your show has recharged my wrestling battery. I'm now making a time to watch the AWs, the Ring of Honors, and the New Japan. You know, my opinion, I watched the Will Ospreay and Dragon Lee, and in my opinion, that's got to go down as one of the matches of the year so far. It was just a great match. And so if I may say, you know, to the WWE fans that are just watching WWE, don't make the same mistake that I've made the last few years. There is so much good wrestling. It's just an awesome time to be a wrestling fan.
Well, John, I mean, you just paid the ultimate compliment to the show, and we appreciate the phone call. Thank you. And that's what we try to do here. I don't think, you know, I don't think we pick favorites. We talk about it. We talk about what the fans want. It's a two-way talk, so you can bring up anything. If somebody wants to talk about Impact Wrestling, call in and talk about Impact Wrestling. But I think we want to educate, and we did that a little earlier in the show, and we'll continue the conversation as well, Bully, about, you know, what the world of pro wrestling right now is offering the fans. And if you really look at it and you look at the landscape right now, this is such a tremendous time to be a fan. Our caller just said, Bully, that, you know, for the most part, all he watched was the WWE. And when it comes to the WWE, there's a vast variety of products that the WWE offers. I mean, it's not just Monday Night Raw anymore. You know, still, most of the calls that we get is going to be about the WWE, and most of those calls on the WWE is going to be about what takes place on Monday. That's still the flagship show, Bully, but the WWE gives you Raw, they give you SmackDown, they give you 205 Live, they give you NXT, UK. I mean, there's so many different products. But again, if you want something that's different, look outside of the WWE, and there's some tremendous products. And I'm glad he brought up Dominion, because go back and watch that show. You know, and he said Will Ospreay and Dragon Lee. And yeah, that may ultimately be in contention for one of the matches of the year, but sometimes that's overlooked because it's not within the walls of the WWE.
Absolutely. It's very easy for that to get overlooked because it's not right smack dab in your face.
Yep.
You know, you talk about NXT, and whenever I think about NXT, I think to myself, why was NXT invented? Like, what did Hunter see out there in the world of pro wrestling that made him invent NXT? And what would your answer be to that?
I always thought that was the WWE's answer to Ring of Honor.
And there you have it. If you want strong wrestling, you don't have to look any farther than NXT or Ring of Honor. So if I'm a WWE fan and I'm not happy with what I'm getting on Raw and I'm not happy with what I'm getting on SmackDown, well, for Christ's sake, watch NXT and watch Ring of Honor, because those are wrestling heavy shows. There are very few, like, real deep storylines in any one of those. I mean, there's more storyline in NXT because they have to get you ready for the, you know, for the main roster. But when you watch NXT and you watch Ring of Honor, what comes to mind? Great wrestling,
yep.
Right, Dave?
Yep.
So there's your answer right there. I mean, it's right at your fingertips. It's very easy to watch, you know, NXT on Wednesday nights. It's very easy to go to ringofhonor.club, subscribe to Honor Club, and check out Ring of Honor. That's your wrestling-heavy stuff. I don't understand why, if you're so upset with one thing, you just don't seek out very easy companies that are at your fingertips to give you what you want.
And I agree with that, Bully, but also, too, even if you love the WWE product, and let's just say you love Monday Night Raw and you love SmackDown, well, if you enjoy wrestling, why not try other products? Because they are so different. You know, it's not like every company outside of WWE is trying to be like the WWE. That is not the case right now. The companies outside of the WWE are trying to be that alternative. They're trying to be that other option. And listen, when I was a kid, Bully, and I know you can relate, VCR was my best friend. I would just tape everything. Because most of pro wrestling, Bully, you know, when we were growing up, pro wrestling wasn't in prime time. It was either early in the morning or very late at night. So my VCR was my friend. But now with streaming services, like, you know, the way you could watch House of Hardcore or, like you said, Honor Club for Ring of Honor. I mean, man, you could watch pro wrestling. You don't have to be in your living room in front of your TV anymore. I mean, you could watch it on your train ride home. You could watch it when you're walking home from school. I mean, you could watch it on your phone. So, I mean, I'm very perplexed that right now that more people are not open to other options that are out there in the world of pro wrestling.
And Dave, I think me and you speak from exact experience, because when we were kids growing up in the Northeast, we were fed a steady diet of WWE. And as much as guys like me, you, and Dreamer, who grew up in New York, appreciated the WWE and liked the WWE, what did we find ourselves seeking out the most?
The NWA.
Why?
Because it was more realistic. It had more of that sporting competitive feel. It was more of a pro wrestling product.
There you go. Everything that's going on today is the exact same thing that we experienced years and years ago. We're fans just like fans are today. Did we sit back and write letters? Did we bitch and moan about how bad the or how bad we thought the WWE was?
No.
What did we do? We just sat in front of our TV, you know, on Saturdays and watched TBS at 6:05 and found ourselves more entertained by that. That's why I bring up the examples of all these other companies. Ring of Honor, Impact, MLW, House of Hardcore, obviously AEW in the future.
Yep.
There's plenty of places. Take what you like about the WWE, find out what they're not giving you enough of, and then go find the company that is giving you enough of that.
I love it, and that's what you should do. And even if you love it, go find other stuff, because there's so much out there, you're probably going to love that too.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
We're getting closer and closer to Stomping Grounds on Sunday, and I will say this. When we spoke on Monday, not excited for what's going to be taking place on Sunday. But I think they did enough on Monday and Tuesday to get me a little juiced for this pay-per-view. What do you think?
What did they specifically do?
Well, you know what they did that they normally don't do, Bully? Connect the dots. And I think they did that in the stories Monday and Tuesday. I think having Ricochet win on Monday was a surprise. You called it. I didn't think it was going to happen. Listen, Ricochet going up against Samoa Joe, that's something that I want to see. Dolph Ziggler, I think, has done a tremendous job on the microphone. You got your quintessential heel in Dolph. You got your quintessential face in Kofi Kingston. in a steel cage. That's a match that I'm excited for. I'm actually excited for Bayley and Alexa Bliss because of Alexa Bliss. And again, we go back to quintessential face, quintessential heel. We got that with Bayley and Alexa Bliss. I'm even a little excited about Roman and Drew McIntyre. Big fan of Drew McIntyre. Interested to see if he can come out the victor. I think he needs to come out the victor, because if he doesn't, then why bother? And then, of course, like we've talked about a lot over the course of the last week, and that is who is going to be the special guest referee for the Baron Corbin Seth Rollins Universal Championship match, and is Brock Lesnar going to be waiting in the wings with the Money in the Bank briefcase?
So what is commanding the most of your attention? Any one of these matches, or who's going to be the referee?
Probably it's the referee.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
It's what they're not telling us that has us the most intrigued. It's a cliffhanger. It's what soap operas do every single day. Leave them with a cliffhanger. I'm intrigued as to who this referee is going to be. I hope I get something great. I hope I get something out of the box. I hope I'm not let down. Even if I am let down, I think there's enough other matches that are gonna have me. I'm not as high on Roman and Drew as you are.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that Drew needs the win. Roman and Drew at WrestleMania, it was good. And I think Roman and Drew will be good again. I do think they need some shenanigans involved here. They need bells and whistles here. Because Drew and Roman just beating each other up, okay, cool. But what did I see Roman do to Drew the other night?
Well, we saw Roman spear and get the best of Shane McMahon. And then
but
we
what
saw
did he do to Drew?
He took out everybody in the party room.
He put Drew through a table.
Yes.
So I saw Roman put Drew through a table last week. I saw Roman spear Shane and leave him laying last week, right?
Yes.
Is that a kind of in reverse? Shouldn't we have done that in reverse?
Well, that's why Drew McIntyre has to get the victory here.
Correct.
Because Roman Reigns has gotten the upper hand in every situation that's occurred on Monday Night Raw. Like you said, he got the victory at WrestleMania. All right, so right there, he got the victory. Then we've seen it played out where he speared and Superman punched Shane McMahon. And then in the party room, he took care of business and then put Drew McIntyre through a table. So if Roman Reigns comes out the victor, you know, what does that do for Drew McIntyre? It does absolutely nothing. That's why I think I'm kind of intrigued in what's going to take place on Sunday. But as you said, everyone seems to want to talk about who the special guest referee could be. And before we get back to the Busted Open Nation, I'm going to repeat it. Maybe I shouldn't. Probably good sense would tell me not to. But as you know, Bully, I don't have good sense. Good sense and LaGreca don't mix.
It's like Skinny Dreamer.
Yes. I threw this out here on Tuesday with Mark, and the fans killed me. But I'm going to throw it out there with you. Is there any chance Bray Wyatt could be the special guest referee on Sunday?
If Bray Wyatt were the special guest referee, I think I'd throw myself off a bridge.
Wow.
Now, I hear a lot of people applauding and saying, oh, please, Bray Wyatt be the special guest referee. But is that what you want to see, Bray Wyatt be the special guest referee?
Now, I know what you're thinking, and I'm probably 99.9% of the nation is thinking just like you are.
Okay, so present your case. Present your best case, Mr. Counselor.
Okay. What do we see on the Firefly Funhouse each week? We see, and we're completely intrigued by it, we see kind of like a Mr. Rogers knockoff. He's got the sweater. He's got the corduroys. He's like the friend to everybody. But we also know he's the Fiend. And we're seeing glimpses of the Fiend. What if we see that side that most of the time we've seen on the Firefly Funhouse? He's not going to be the Bray Wyatt with the mask. He's not going to be the evil Bray Wyatt. He is going to be the squeaky clean, play by the rules Bray Wyatt in that match on Sunday.
How would Baron Corbin even know how to get to Bray Wyatt right now? Where is Bray Wyatt? Why would anybody want to talk to Bray Wyatt right now? Well, you asked me earlier, well, why would Baron Corbin ever ask Brock Lesnar to be the special guest referee? Well, why would Baron Corbin ask Bray Wyatt?
So you wouldn't be, and you're right, you got to think.
No, answer my question.
Well,
why would he ask Bray Wyatt?
Maybe because he feels that, you know what, there's an evil side to him, and maybe Baron Corbin is friends of the Fiend.
Come on, Dave. Stop it. Stop. You can't believe what you're saying.
Little like as Alex Metz just said in my left ear, mind games, maybe.
What do you think that does for the Bray Wyatt Fiend character? That the first time we ever see him in a ring is as a referee, in a referee shirt. We talked about on the show, you went bonkers for my idea about never seeing Bray until it was the absolute right time to see Bray. We agreed that all we wanted to see Bray do was terrorize the entire company, from the ring crew to Vince McMahon. And now you want to see him as a referee?
I'm not saying I want to see him as a referee. I'm presenting the idea of him being the referee.
No, what you're doing now is what we asked the nation not to do. Don't just throw out a name. You got to give me a reason why.
I just gave you some reasons.
Because he's mean? What's the reason?
God, I hope it happens on Sunday.
Yo, just because you could say I told you so.
Yeah, pretty much.
They listen to the show, so they'll probably make him the referee. Just ha. See what I did there?
Well,
that LaGreca guy. Ever since Snake Sabo wore his shirt at Download, I'm going with his ideas.
It's better than Sting. He'll trip on his trench coat when he tries to go down for.
But
the
I made
count.
An. But I could make an argument
know,
for Sting because hey, I'm gonna the guy that's gonna be the special guest referee is the guy that whose career you ended. So now Seth has got to be like, oh my God, does this guy have a vendetta against me? That's like legitimate.
I'm just throwing it out there. And listen, is there any chance at all that we see Bray Wyatt at Stomping Grounds on Sunday?
It's the world of sports entertainment. So could you see Bray Wyatt as the special guest referee? Of course you can, because all you got to do is take the pencil and write it down, and poof, it magically happens.
You can see it, like he's got a red turtleneck on, and he's got the referee shirt over the red turtleneck.
Now, seeing Bray Wyatt at the end would be intriguing. Seeing him anywhere, I always liked what they did with Kane, with the cut in the ring and the kind of dragging somebody to hell thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you want to see with Bray Wyatt.
Just throwing it out there, maybe. I'm just throwing out some ideas. I'm spitballing here.
Okay.
All right.
Maybe you got somebody backstage that you talk to, feeding you information.
Maybe a little birdie in my ear. Who knows?
Who do you got? Who would be your birdie?
I got nobody.
I got nobody.
Nobody's talking to me. Charles, who do you think might be the special guest referee on Sunday, other than Bray Wyatt?
Hey, guys. What's up?
What's up, buddy?
Actually, the reason for my call is that I've kind of thought of a minor plot hole in Becky being the referee.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, the thing is, if Becky were made the referee, I assume she would have restrictions put on her. Like, if she didn't call down the middle, she'd be stripped of the Raw Women's Championship. That's your thinking, I bet, right?
I mean, that's something that could be thrown out there. It is Baron Corbin that's choosing Becky Lynch. Yeah, so if she doesn't officiate it in a certain way, that maybe she's stripped of her Raw Women's Championship.
Okay, so like calling it down the middle, so to say.
Yes.
What's to stop Seth Rollins from immediately after the bell rings, he hits Baron Corbin with the chair, Becky calls a DQ, Corbin wins by DQ, and the match is over in 30 seconds.
Why would a babyface like Seth Rollins ever want to win by disqualification?
Well, I mean, look what...
Well, no, stop. Just, hold on, Dave. Let him talk.
It's just something that I thought about as a possibility to get out of it. I mean, it's a way to screw over Corbin to get the best over Corbin.
So you're promising people a main event, a Universal Championship match, and you're saying that the bell rings and Seth just hits Baron Corbin with the chair and Becky disqualifies him and they walk away from the ring. You think that's entertaining or would make the universe happy?
No, I definitely don't think that. But another thing with that is that the other thing I kind of thought of is that if you make Becky the special guest referee, and regardless of the outcome, whether Corbin wins, whether Seth retains, whether Brock Lesnar cash ins, I thought of another kind of plot hole by Baron Corbin making Becky the referee.
And I hear what you're doing, Charles. You're trying to connect the dots. And again, like Bully said, a babyface champion, but obviously we talked about it on the show Monday and Tuesday. Seth Rollins didn't exactly play the babyface champion role. And then the fact that he's used this chair to all the potential guest referees, you would have to think, Bully, that this chair is going to come into play in this match on Sunday.
I think it would come into play in him being disarmed. I think that if earlier in the show, you know, if you saw Seth and Baron face to face and Seth say, it doesn't matter who you pick, just remember what I did to everybody on Raw and everybody on SmackDown. I don't care who it is. Your pick gets laid out by my steel chair. Becky Lynch. And now that steel chair has to be put down. What does Seth Rollins do now? Now the heel has one up on the babyface. They're in a precarious situation. Now you figure out a way for the heroes to get out of that precarious situation and come out at the end shining. You can have that moment with Becky and Seth face to face. You can have that moment where Seth wins the battle, but he's still down. And think of the moment with Brock Lesnar. Two moments that I see happening. Seth and Becky face to face, maybe about to go for a kiss. Brock Lesnar music hits. Or Seth is down, Brock's music hits, and Becky is the one having to stand in front of Brock Lesnar. We talked about making somebody outside of the box ways of making somebody. We agree that Becky was at her highest since WrestleMania. Since WrestleMania, not as high, right, Dave?
Agreed.
All you need to do is see Becky Lynch stand up to Brock Lesnar. Not physically, just stand face to face with him. And I'll prove my point right here. Do you remember the Battle Royal at All In?
Yes.
Do you remember at the end of the match after Jordan Grace threw out Brian Cage in the ring?
Yes.
Threw Brian Cage out?
Yep.
When she turned around, who did she go face to face with? Thanks, Dave.
It was with you.
Correct. Face to face with me. In that moment, Jordan was made because she had the guts to stand up to me. It's that moment in time that tells everybody, wow, look at this girl. So yeah, her throwing Brian Cage out of the ring, that was cool physically, but man, I got to see how much guts she had because she stood up to this bully, because she stood up to this monster. How much guts would Becky Lynch have if she stood up to the beast?
Woo, you talk about the man face to face with the beast.
I mean, come on. That's how you make. Now, I'm not saying that physicality has to happen. I'm not telling you that Becky Lynch is going to lay out Brock Lesnar. If Brock Lesnar F5 Becky Lynch, I'd be in my glory.
Yeah.
I would love that. I would have Heyman handcuff Rollins to the ropes and F5 Becky Lynch and just dangle that briefcase right in front of him and tell him, I could have did this right now, but I did something that hurt you a lot more.
Like it.
That's storytelling.
Thanks for listening. Catch us weekdays on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.